Welcome back to the Razzball Basketball Podcast. This is Viz, and joined once again by Brent, Craig, and Son. Brent, how you doing?
Good, Alex. How are you?
Doing well. Craig, how goes it in overseas?
Oh, well, I could say that I'm doing well, but actually I kind of feel like I've been sucker punched by Mike Tyson and sort of woken up feeling like Greg Oden. But,
oh, no.
I'm surviving.
And Son, how are you doing?
20-year-old trapped in a 50-year-old's body.
Yeah. I'm doing well. I got a little of the bug as well. So, I don't feel like I got hit by Mike Tyson. Maybe more like Glass Joe, but I'm still kind of feeling it a little bit.
I figured, you know, we were going to start with the DeMarcus injury, but now this blockbuster trade, we got to start there. So, seemingly out of nowhere, you know, Woj tweets out, Clippers and Pistons are talking about Blake Griffin, and an hour later, the deal was set. So Blake Griffin goes with Bryce Johnson and Willie Reed to Detroit, and Detroit gets back Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley.
The Clippers.
The Clippers. They get Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, Boban, a first-round pick that I'll almost certainly convey this year, and then a second-round pick on top of that, too. Just a huge trade for the directions of both franchises. The Clippers on the verge of rebuilding, resetting, however you want to look at it. And the Pistons now going all in on this roster. We'll start with you, Son. Just your overall thoughts on the trade for both teams.
Yeah, I really like the trade for the Clippers. And I really do not like the trade for Detroit, but, you know, I get it. You know, as we were talking off air, Stan Van Gundy's, you know, he's kind of just pushing chips into the middle. He's for no regard of long-term effects. He's just like, all right, I need to get guys. And, he has a hard-on for, you know, Luke Kennard and Stanley Johnson. So, you know, looks like he wants to get those guys on the court. For the Clippers, they get two solid players. But more importantly, I mean, they clean their books. Avery Bradley's off the books next year. I think Tobias has one more year left. They're going to be, they get the two draft picks, a first and a second. I think the first is top five protected, I believe. They're getting those assets and, you know, they're going to be major players in free agency. You kind of got to think that Lou and DJ, are going to garner some interest and they'll probably, you know, if they get the right deal, they'll probably part ways with them. Ultimately, I think everything for me comes down to I've always been a big, you know, Jerry West guy. And I think just everything that he does, it is gold. So, you know, it was actually kind of surprising that they gave Griffin that extension in the offseason. So that kind of, you know, I was kind of like, whoa, what are they doing? But, you know, now I think they've, you know, decided to right the ship and go from there. And, you know, I have full confidence in, you know, what they're going to do in the future. Your thoughts, guys?
Yeah, it's funny. I think last podcast we were talking a lot about potential trades, and obviously this isn't one that we had thought of. And I just kind of offhandedly just said, it seems like every year there's some trade that just comes out of the blue that nobody predicts. And, you know, this is the one. I think I heard Woj on the radio today, or someone was talking about what he tweeted today, where he said, I guess they started talks about six days ago between the two teams. Mm-hmm. And then it like really, really heated up today and or yesterday and then got done today. So, everybody's sort of picking this as a win for the Clippers. And I definitely see it. They unload a highly paid, injury-prone guy and who probably nobody ever thought could be traded after he got that contract. They get Bradley to get off. I'm not going to repeat what Sun said, but, you know, they got some great pieces. So, but I do think the Pistons, I do think that this could help them, and I do think it gives them a legitimate shot to get into the playoffs in the East, which, you know, could be argued that that's not the best thing for the franchise, but, I see what they're trying to do. Boban, you know, he's really tough, to play in the NBA. We love him in fantasy because of he's a per minute monster. And, I do think that from a fantasy perspective, I think he's worth adding just for the chance that he gets that they moved DeAndre Jordan, and then but he's splitting time with Montrezl Harrell, so he could end up getting close to 20 minutes. And if you need boards and blocks, you know, I think you go grab Boban. I grabbed him in a couple of leagues. And the Pistons, you know, really hated playing him because he can't. Most second units on a lot of teams these days put in the smaller lineup, kind of like the Warriors, you know, death unit. And Boban just cannot get out and guard those guys. But with Drummond and Griffin, I mean, you could put Drummond on the bench and put Griffin at the five against those smaller units, and he can get out and guard those guys. It gives him a lot of athleticism. I mean, Bradley, to say he's been a bust this year in real life and fantasy is probably an understatement. I have him on two teams, and so I can tell you it's been painful to just check the box score every day and see that he got like 40 minutes and scored 6 points with no threes. And, you know, so we'll see. I think maybe he gets re-energized in L.A., I could definitely see that, especially if LA moves Lou Williams. Then, I do see Bradley as a good buy low. Probably you don't have to give up a whole lot to get him, so probably low risk buy low. The off chance that he, you know, gets back to where he was. But with the Pistons, you know, I think they noticed that Reggie Bullock was playing pretty well. Johnson had kind of put together a couple good games. Kennard, you know, really hasn't done anything, but for what he must look great in practice. So Stan Van Gundy's ready to put him in. So I think all those guys are potential adds in deeper leagues. Once Reggie Jackson's back, you know, Ish Smith, his value is going to go in the toilet probably. But I do see, you know, they're going to have a pretty athletic team that can compete with a lot of the faster teams out there. So I do like it for the Pistons. It's a tough salary to take on, but time will tell. I think if they make it into the playoffs and they're competitive, then I think it's a win because they have a brand new stadium that they can't get anybody to come into. So anything that gives that franchise some kind of face, like now they finally have a superstar in Blake Griffin, somebody who's recognizable, who's in car commercials. Maybe they could actually get people to come in and watch a game. So I think that's all wins for the Pistons. And I think in fantasy, I think we all win too, because I think a lot more guys become relevant. A lot of guys that are on waivers. And if you got the room, go out and get them because they're going to help.
Craig, your thoughts?
Wow. I can't believe it. So we were talking last week, weren't we, about Pelicans having like a yeah, Anthony Davis and Drew and Cousins and like nobody else. And I think Detroit have put themselves exactly into this territory now. You think that kind of salary that they're going to be having in like 2019 and 20, that's best part of $80 million on the books on just Griffin, Drummond and Reggie Jackson. And you just think, well, where's this bench going to come from? I don't think there's going to be one. I think there was also a bit of this kind of, I've got no issues with Stanley Johnson, guy can play defense. I expect a lot more out of him coming out the draft. And I think that obviously this is a little bit of us saying, from a Detroit standpoint, saying, well, actually, we're going to back our guy, Luke Kennard, now after they completely fucked up by not taking Donovan Mitchell in the draft. Bearing in mind that Mitchell apparently nailed the workout that he had for them. So I think there's probably a bit of an element there of them saying, right, we're going to back our guy now. Van Gundy had obviously said before that he was going to raise his minutes, but didn't quite see it through these circumstances. But yeah, you just look at the books now and you think 2019-20, that's really $80 million gone just on Griffin, Drummond and Jackson. Maybe Griffin and Jackson can muster about 50 games between them that season. And on the flip side, the Clippers have probably got a salary budget of about $4.36 still owed to Sam Decker by that point. So from a fantasy standpoint, I think that the other guys hit the nail on the head, really. The Clippers become major free agent players in 2019, 2020. Detroit Pistons become starter loaded, so plug your guys in there. I can't get too excited about Luke Kennard. I think he's just pretty much a three-point scorer at this stage. I don't think he's a tremendous ball handler or anything at this level. But definitely plug your starters in for your Pistons and your Clippers. Well, I think we'll just have to wait and see how it affects guys like Montrezl Harrell. I can't ever really roster Boban. I hear your point about 20 minutes per game, but you just don't know when he is and isn't going to be playing, and I can't really see him being much of a Doc Rivers guy. That's if Doc's going to be around for much longer. So yeah, definitely a shock for me today.
Yeah, I mean, just to hit on that point too, I mean, if Lawrence Frank didn't come in, like, I could never have seen Doc make this trade a year ago. It's just that never going to happen. And like Sun said, Jerry West coming in, it changed the whole direction of the franchise. I mean, long term, this is just awful for Detroit in my mind. But let's focus on now at least. So I think they were a horrible rebounding team this year, and I don't really know why, but that should be shored up with Blake. And I do think what could help them offensively is, Brent said, Avery Bradley's having a bad year. 25% usage and 50% true shooting, which is well below league average of 55. So, I mean, losing him is kind of going to help in that regard. But, I mean, the wings are just so bad. Now we have Kennard, who is a three-point shooter only. I mean, he's shooting 43% from three. It's a small sample at this point. But I don't have much doubt about him being a quality shooter. It's everything else. Where Stanley, he can't shoot, but he can defend. So it's like the spacing is going to be tougher. I know Blake's shooting a lot more threes this year, but it just seems like Detroit locked themselves into super mediocrity, and maybe they could end up being a 7-8 seed every year and losing the first round. But I just, when you make this move, like, there's no path for you to get better. Like, you're locked into everyone on this team now. How do you get better? Does Reggie Jackson bounce back? But what does bounce back to? Like, being a league average or slightly below average starting point guard? Like, it's a huge risk. And now, even this year, like, the Clippers can get to $24 million in space pretty easily, even up to 30 if, you know, if Paul George or someone randomly decided, I want to go to the Clippers. The Clippers could do that this year. But the only long-term contract they have on the books into 2019 is Gallinari. So, like Craig said, I mean, they're going to have so much space in 2019 if they want to get involved. It's hard to judge the Clippers roster right now because we just don't know who's going to stay. Like, I like Bradley next to Lou Orte-Adosic. Gallo and Harris together is going to be pretty rough defensively. But yeah, overall, I just think it was a move that the Clippers had to make because, you know, one more injury to Blake and you're never getting out of that contract then. And now they got out of making that or giving him 5 years, $173 million, having to give him $39 million at 32 years old when, you know, he's already missed 35% of the games the last 3 years. It's hard for me to not say this trade's an A for them and an F for Detroit, but I do think Brent made a good point. Like, with the new arena, they can get in the playoffs. Blake's the best player they've had in the last 10 years at least. So there is some short-term appeal, and, you know, that's what Stan Van Gundy was trying to do because he's trying to keep his job right now.
Well, Alex, you know, like, even when the Pistons were winning championships with Billups and Hamilton and Rasheed Wallace, like, even then they really haven't had, like, a superstar, you know? That was really just, you know, that was a Detroit type of team. Like, it was just a bunch of good players. You know, I could make an argument. I don't think that Billups, Rip Hamilton, or Rasheed Wallace are Hall of Famers. I don't, you know, but Blake Griffin, you know, is on his way to being a Hall of Famer. And he's, you know, all over TV. He's, you know, the guy people want to watch. Like, this is a big win for the Pistons from a PR standpoint, I think. But this, what really struck me as funny and just shows that how much a business at the NBA is I read this thing where it was saying Griffin just like 2 weeks ago or something, like, stood up at a Clippers meeting and said how, like, I want to be a Clipper for life. I want to go down and, you know, in history as a Clipper. And then boom, they got rid of him. Like, it's just funny, you know, it's such a business. But I wanted to get Sun's opinion on just who he thinks, like, the big winners are from a fantasy perspective, and who he thinks, you know, we should go out and grab on the waiver wire, because that's my first thought anytime I see a trade.
Free Boban. You know, yeah, and I love him. You know, he's a permanent star. But, you know, like you guys mentioned earlier, the minutes are going to be an issue. How is Doc going to handle all that? I think Tobias is going to be interesting for the Clippers. You know, we'll see how he fits in with Gallinari. I guess they would put Tobias at the power forward and Gallo at the small forward. Is that what you guys are thinking there?
Probably depends who the other team has, how they're going to match up defensively, but I don't think it really matters too much. I guess I kind of think Harris would be on the bigger guy if there is one, but it really depends on who they're going against, I think.
Right, because, I mean, he's, you know, he doesn't really contribute too much in the periphery stats, but, like, the boy can shoot. And, you know, you still got Teodosic there. You know, you still got, whatever, Bradley, Rivers, Williams. That's a nice little shooting guard combo. I do really like Tobias. I'm trying to look at from the Detroit side. I mean, I don't know how that Drummond-Blake combo is going to work, to be honest with you.
So I guess their hope, I'm assuming, is that with Drummond coming along as far as he has as a passer and with Blake's passing ability, that'll still give them enough spacing for their offense to work.
Maybe, but
again, the problem is now, like, you're going to be playing Stanley Johnson huge minutes, and he's shooting 28% from three this year. So,
right. Because, like, the few times I've watched, you know, the Pistons play, like, they'll bring Andre Drummond up to the, you know, up to either set a screen or to get the ball, and then he does a dribble handoff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the guys swings over, you know, like, gates over and, you know, usually, you know, can shoot the three, and then he'll roll to the basket, whatever. Like, are they going to – I mean, in that scenario – it just seems to me that they're going to kind of neuter Blake's fantasy, you know, production, because, like, he's just going to be laying out on, you know, like, hanging out in the corner three or hanging out on the wings. I don't know. It'd be kind of retarded to have him on the low post and Drummond up high, right? So, so I don't know. When they bring up the high screens for Drummond, you know, you're just going to keep Drummond up there and then just have Blake down low, or... I mean, to me, I would think Drummond's going to be down low most of the time. And then if that's the case, then Blake's going to be just hanging out as a spot-up shooter? Or are they going to go high-low action with him? Like, I have no idea. Like, what do you guys think? I think his fantasy production goes down just because, you know, the pace is going to be slower and it's going to be more methodical. But I just don't see him being as involved. I don't know. Your thoughts?
I think Craig's comparison to the Pelicans was pretty spot on. So what do you think, Craig? Is it going to be similar to that situation?
Well, I don't think the situation for Blake Griffin changes drastically. He played with a similar guy in DeAndre Jordan at the Clippers, who obviously sort of hung around the basket doing his thing. And I think a lot of the offense will still go through Blake. You know, we're talking about a big who does get involved in the passing game. He does like to shoot the mid-range jumper and beyond. I think what will be interesting will be what the effect does have on his sort of three-point attempts going to Detroit, because I think they will go down. I don't think he'll shoot as many threes. But it's quite difficult to tell at the moment. I never really had Blake Griffin as a sort of Van Gundy player. So
let me ask you a question, Craig.
What to expect?
Sorry, can I squeeze in here? Let me just ask you a quick question. Like, Blake with DJ... wouldn't it be a little bit different dynamic, because the Clippers never really ran plays for DeAndre, whereas Drummond, you know, a lot of the offense, like, does funnel through him, especially down low.
But do you not think it's going to hurt Drummond in a sense? I think it hurts Drummond quite significantly. But I think that there'll be less plays that run through Drummond. Otherwise, I think that if your entire play is going to come through your entire front court, it's going to become too predictable.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm just trying to figure out, like, all right, so if you're going to run the offense through Blake, like, you would have to be on the perimeter, right? Like, because if you put him down low, like, what does that do to Drummond? Like, what is he going to do? He just, right? So, I mean, more often than not, you would probably go through Drummond and then have Blake cut, or have him, you know, like, hang out on the three-point line. I'm just not sure. Like, what do you guys think is probably, like, SVG's plan on how he's going to incorporate the two guys?
Well, I think for me at the moment, it's basically I've got two jigsaw pieces from two different puzzles. I'm just trying to bang them in with a hammer at the moment to see what's up.
I mean, Stan's offense has always been one in, four out, and now it's like, I do think Drummond will take a hit in the rebounding, and it's hard to imagine him averaging 15 boards a game with Blake next to him. Granted, he is a monster, and it'll probably still be in the 12 to 14 range. I don't think it's going to be a huge hit. I mean, maybe Blake's assist go up, because right now, anything to get the ball in Ishmael's hands is a plus for Detroit. He's single-handedly winning games for the other teams. He's been so bad. Reggie knows if he'll even be healthy, so I don't know.
A lot of 4-5 pick and roll, you think? With Blake? Blake and Trump?
It's like such a weird
feeling. It's possible.
I'm assuming they stagger, so they have one of the two on the court all the time. And yeah, I do think, Blake with Tolliver on the second unit or however they want to stagger him could work fairly well.
Okay.
Because Tolliver gives them a 3-point shooter then at the floor, and you could really have five guys on the floor who could shoot depending on how you do it, at least passively. Blake's got to the point, he's at 34% from three. It's not going to kill you if he's taking some shots, but I think Brent's right too. I mean, his highest in 3-point attempts before this year was 2 a game. This year he's at 5.7. I don't think that number is going to stay that high.
I could see them closing a lot of games with once Reggie Jackson is back, with kind of Reggie Jackson, Reggie Bullock, Luke Kennard, with Drummond and Griffin, just to because Jackson can shoot threes and Kennard can hit. Mm-hmm. And Bullock's hit four threes in the last two games. Four in each of the games. So he's got range. Johnson, he's just, I don't know. I don't think he's going to be there at the end of games. I think he's best coming off the bench. He just flashes so much potential, but he's just so inconsistent. So, that's why I could see probably the red. But the one thing they're missing, if they're going to be similar to the Clippers team when they had DeAndre and Blake, is they don't have a Chris Paul, though. They don't really have a really good facilitator. I mean, Ish Smith can be that at times, but like you guys are saying, he gets too many turnovers. He just looks lost out there sometimes. And Reggie Jackson is definitely not Chris Paul. They're just going to – the games they win, it will just be based on just their athleticism. I don't know that they're going to be able to develop any kind of consistent scheme with those guys.
Yeah, I mean, Craig was about to say what I was thinking too. Like, defensively, if you don't have Stanley out there and you're going against a good wing – I think you're just going to get toasted. Now, there are some teams I think they can get away with it, but if you go against – they just have no other wing stopper besides Stanley. So for all of his offensive deficiencies, they probably need him out there against most teams because someone will have a decent wing score. And, you can't trust Reggie Bullock or Luke Kennard at this point to defend anybody.
Yeah, and SDG loves him. He loves Johnson. It's like he looks for any excuse to get him into the lineup. So, he should get up plenty of run.
Any excuse we have for Sun to say that Stan loves Johnson is good enough.
yeah. Stan is all about the Johnson. Not me, but the SVG is all about the Johnson. Yeah. He's had a hard-on for the Johnson. How's that?
I think we're going to see the Van Gundy broadcasting duo pretty soon.
I mean... It's you just have
he to said his brother. Yeah,
you have to expect at this point that he's gonna bail before it becomes an epic disaster. There, he only has 1 year left on his contract. So, say they do still miss the playoffs, and I can't imagine them renewing his contract. And then, is he gonna coach and be the GM as a lame duck? I don't know. It could potentially get bad really quickly if they at least don't get in the playoffs this year. Does anyone else have any thoughts on this trade before we talk about DeMarcus?
I think they're not done dealing yet, surely. You look at this Detroit roster and you think there's another move in there somewhere before the deadline. Maybe Ersan Ilyasova can end up on his 73rd team in his last 5 years or something. But there's another move in there somewhere, surely.
Yeah, you would think
they can get Tyreke Evans. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to say. I guess, you can give up a second-round pick for somebody, but there's no interesting pieces to really trade either. Like, no one's going to buy into Henry Ellenson, or like the team is just lacking in high upside players too, really. So I agree they're going to make a move. It's, you know, it probably is the Ilyasova or even like Bellinelli type of guy that you just get for a second rounder for the rest of the year. So we spent a lot of time talking about the Pelicans and DeMarcus last week. Had that incredible game and blows out his Achilles with 10 seconds left the other day. Out for the season, probably out a good 10 months, so we don't even know if he'll be back start next season. I mean, this is going to drastically change the Pelicans franchise going forward. Do they decide to re-sign him? I mean, personally, and this will never happen with Dell Demps, but I think the time to trade Anthony Davis is right now, and you just do a hard reset because it's so bleak now. You had some hope with the two of them together, and now just big men don't come back from an Achilles tear. Let's get your thoughts on the situation, Craig, in general.
Well, I don't know if you guys saw. Do you guys see the guy that sort of got onto court and started warming up?
Yeah, that was awesome. That was the best.
Well, if I was Alvin Gentry, I was thinking, well, hang on, let's have a look at this guy before we just kick him out of the stadium. You know, we could do with a sort of 7-8th man off the bench. But in all seriousness, yeah, I think you're right. I think that every Pelicans fan doesn't want to believe that they're going to move Anthony Davis. And I think they're sort of holding on to this thought that he will re-sign with them, we can rebuild around him. But I just think that the time is right now, and I think that's kind of a nail in the coffin. There's plenty of assets that can be gained. We talked about Boston, and obviously Boston's in the position to really make that deal that can work for both teams, potentially long-term. And I just think that, you know, you've got to push the reset button, like you said, and let's think, you know, 2019 and beyond now, really. I don't know what else the Pelicans can do. There was talk that there were going to be buyers and not sellers. But who are you going to bring in? You know, what quality is really out there which is going to make this sort of Pelican side actually effective in the playoffs?
Brent or Son, whoever wants to go, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, do they... You know, could they? Is this a chance to get Cousins back on like a discount 1-year deal and give it one more shot?
So I mean,
when he comes back, since things started to click.
Right. I mean, in theory, it makes sense. And if DeMarcus believes in himself, maybe you see that. But on the other hand, he might just want to get however much money he can lock up. You might want to take that too. So we don't know what his thought process is. We don't know where his rehab's going to be. I can't imagine anyone giving him a big commitment, but all it takes is one team. Could be New Orleans.
It's sad because you know, they were saying that the team was set to give him the 5-year max extension. Yeah. You know, that's sad. You know, it's just, you know, it really sucks. You know, like you said, it only takes one team. So I mean, he's coming off an Achilles, but he's still, you know, he's not 30 yet. So someone's gonna take the shot. You know, like we just saw, you know, Stan Van getting traded for Blake Griffin, right? So, you know, like things will happen. I mean, you know, football, you know, some guy, they drafted Tim Tebow in the first round. So, you know, all it takes is one guy, and there's just too much potential, too much talent there for someone not to take a chance on him. But yeah, it'd be tough, but I'm with Craig. I mean, you gotta hit the reset, you know, unlike, you know, Detroit, like, being in the middle, mediocrity is the worst position to be in as a sports franchise, right? It's just, you know, that just shows a lack of vision. You know, you either want to be first or worse. So, you know, the stock market is all about timing, right? Like value and what, you know, this type of assets you can get, buy low, sell high. You can get so much for Anthony Davis. You could probably get some for Drew a little bit, you know, depending on the market, whatever or not. But, yeah, I mean, you can get so much for them. You could probably get two young players, high draft pick, that'll set you up pretty nicely. I saw a lot of stuff on Twitter. If you're Boston, Jason Tatum, you know, obviously would be like the headline of the package. So basically Tatum for Anthony Davis. Would you guys do that if you're a Boston Celtics fan? Or is AD head and shoulders above? Or like what's your perception on that?
If Hayward is coming along, I'd get rid of Tatum for Davis.
Okay, no questions, right?
I mean, I think the Pelicans are even going to want more. I think they're going to want one of the first round picks or whatever. But
for sure,
I would still do that in Boston's shoes. I would let whichever one they want, Tatum or Brown, and add picks to there. I think you'd have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I thought it was a kind of a no-brainer, but I guess there's a lot of people that feel like, Tatum is on that level. And the injury risk.
Ainge might be one of those people. I mean, he traded back, and he said Tatum was one on his board. He thought he was still going to get him, so he might not want to do it. And regardless, if they say, we're not trading you Tatum, Boston is so loaded with assets that they could still put together a package for him. I mean, I guess the one interesting thing is, like, the Pelicans still should make the playoffs fairly easily. Like, they're two up on the Clippers, who are ninth right now, but the Clippers just traded Blake and probably are going to trade more guys away. And the next team is Utah, who's six games back. So even with Utah getting healthier and having a fairly easy schedule the rest of the way, six games is a lot to make up. So I think the Pelicans are still going to get in. And whether that's enough, rightly or we all think wrongly that they won't trade Davis at that point, but I fully expect them to run out the rest of the year with them, and then at the end of the season maybe we see the Davis move. Mirotić now, maybe they could get him, and the fit next to Davis would be a little better. I don't know. They're going to try to add some people because Demps is in the same, not quite the same spot as Stan Van Gundy, but it's very close. Like, they had to make the playoffs this year, and they probably are still going to, and I don't know if it'll save his job, but I think the Pelicans are going to go all in and get and add whatever rotation guys they can get, because as we've talked about before, they're just lacking in rotation guys.
Yeah, you make the trade. If you're Boston, you got to make that trade. I love Jason Tatum, and I do think he's going to be a star, but it's all about the windows and continuity. And but like it was stated before, Boston have that continuity. They've got the picks. And not just the picks. Let's not discount the talent that they do have on the bench. You're talking about extremely talented high upside guys like Gershon Yabusele, fantastic player, just obviously in a situation and obviously very raw at the moment. There's a lot of guys still to develop, let alone all the draft picks as well. So if you're Boston, you live for the now almost, because you have saved for a rainy day.
Craig, I'm with you on the living for the now, because one thing that all these big injuries, watching Hayward go down in game one and Cousins go down, one thing it should make a lot of these teams realize is if you got a shot at it, even if you think the Warriors are untouchable and you're trying to stock up for a couple of years from now or whatever, I think if you got a shot, you go for it, because you never know when the big man's going to come down with 10 seconds left and be done, and you lose your top guy. So if you got if you got a team where one more piece could put you right up there at the top and everyone's healthy, I think you go for it now. And don't risk waiting for it and then having an injury that delays it even longer. And next thing you know, the 2-year plan turned into a 5-year plan.
Yeah, I mean, it takes is one ankle turn by someone on Golden State, too, and then you're really in it,
I'm just looking through the trade machine right now. I don't know if there will be a way for them to get the salaries to match unless they bring in a third team. So Davis is $23 million. They're not going to trade Hayward, Horford, or Irving, right? Oh, I guess they would trade Horford?
Oh, man.
Because Tatum's only $5 million.
The difficulty in that is, like, will New Orleans even see Horford as a positive asset with a couple?
Exactly.
You might have to add a little more to him. Yeah, you're right. It will be tough. They do have, I believe it's like $7 to $7.5 million.
The exemption.
Perhaps 8 million. Yeah. They give someone all that money and tack on an extra year. I mean, I think that's why, Boston trading for Rodney Hood is an interesting thing, because he's an RFA, right? And then you could sign him to whatever money to match for that trade. He can become the salary you need to trade somewhere else, really, which is kind of a weird way to look at a decent player, but that is what Boston will need to make a trade. I mean, it's just, I just can't get back to how devastating this is for New Orleans and how quickly, like, things can go downhill. Because, I mean, I have flashbacks as a Jazz fan at 2010. Now, Memento Core isn't DeMarcus Cousins. I don't want to make it sound that way, but Utah was 53-29. They get in the playoffs, you know, and Okor blows out his Achilles the first game. They still end up beating Denver, but they lose to the Lakers, get swept. You know, Lakers probably would have beat them anyway, but it would have been an interesting matchup with Okor, how good of a three-point shooter he was. And then within the next 6 months, Boozer leaves, and Darren Williams gets traded, and Jerry Sloan retires. And it just, everything tailspinned, all because of one guy getting hurt and just, you know, he never came back. Okor might have played another 1,000 minutes in the NBA, if even. And I just kept thinking, like, New Orleans' franchise is just, it's never going to be the same. They're going to go down this road, and it's only a matter of time now, I think, till they end up moving Davis somewhere.
I would have taken any bet for any amount of money in the entire world that Mehmet Okur would not have come up tonight during a conversation about DeMarcus Cousins and how devastating the injury was to the franchise.
Well, you know, that's why we got to sing the little jingle. Nobody beats the Viz. Nobody beats the Viz.
I'm just waiting for Greg Ostertag and Howard Eisley to come up.
In Utah, you know, they go down this path and they don't make the playoffs again for 7 years. And that could be where New Orleans is at. And, hell, they haven't made it in how long now? They had the one appearance with Davis as the 8th seed against Golden State. But before that, the last time was with Chris Paul on the team. So I just feel bad for them. And, I mean, is there anything for New Orleans fantasy-wise? I mean, what's the impact here? I mean, Drew's going to have the ball probably more. I guess, God, is Rondo going to be playing more? Like, I don't even know.
My guy is, I was listening to actually the World of War guys, and I totally forgot about him, but Terrence Jones. He's down in the G League, and he's been balling it up. But I remember last year, you know, there were moments where, you know, he was playing 4AD, and you know, he's a baller. It's just a matter of if they bring him up, and I just don't see why they wouldn't. You know, whether they're gonna play, like, start Dante Cunningham? Wouldn't you rather have Terrence Jones?
Or Cheick Diallo? The preseason sleeper Cheick Diallo.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know.
But you don't think Darius Miller, at least in the short term, is your guy from a fantasy point of view, isn't it? They're still going to need to stretch the court. Mm-hmm. It might even, to a certain degree, in some areas, help that they're getting more minutes out of a more natural three-point shooter. I think they've got to play Miller at least to start with. They're going to need that
size? Three-point. I mean, you think he has enough size to bang down low?
I think they've got to change the way that they play. I mean, he's only, what, 6'7", 6'8", or something, isn't he?
But
they're going to need to shoot threes, aren't they, from the front court. Someone's got to pick up where Cousins left off, at least in that sense. Obviously, you know, you're not going to get the size. You're not going to get anywhere near the type of game. I think they need to change the way that they play. And I think, at least in the short term, Darius Miller's got to be the guy, isn't he? I mean, Cunningham, haven't we seen Cunningham sort of go 35 minutes, get two rebounds, one assist, and 2 points?
He just stands in the corner. Not to be too harsh, but
I think we should get off the Pelicans. should we just all agree that there's nobody exciting on that team other than Davis?
The guy that tried to thrash the team. He was pretty excited.
Yes.
How about John Wall? Goes to see his doctor again that did his knee surgeries. Missed the last game. Doubtful to play Tuesday. We don't really have a timetable. Does anyone have interest in Satoransky or anyone else on the Wizards? And if you were a Wall owner, where's your panic level at, son? Start with you.
Yeah, no, it'd be pretty high. you know, anytime there's, you know, there's uncertainty, there's questions, you know, and especially with the knee, you know, you try to get the second opinion, you know, that means, you know, you're not happy with the first opinion, and that's usually not a good sign. And, you know, it's not like he was even playing that well to begin with.
Right.
I think he was like the top 60, top 70 fantasy player. So, yeah, I would be pretty, pretty worried. And, you know, if you could, you know, I mean, he still has name value, right? So if you can trade him, get something for him, I would be all for that.
Brent, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd be super worried if I was a Wall owner. And I don't really see anyone too exciting on the Wizards. I guess Oubre probably gets some extra run. I don't know. Yeah, if I was a Wall owner, I'd be looking for a backup plan right now. I know you're not going to be able to replace that, those type of numbers, but I don't know, maybe a Van Vliet.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Frazier played the last game, and he had 4 points, 4 rebounds, 14 assists, 1 steal, 3 blocks. We've seen him have some random games like that before with Pelicans, but I mean, I think Satoransky's a better player. The problem with Satoransky is he doesn't shoot much at all. Like, I don't know, and from a fantasy perspective, you're getting like no steals or blocks. Craig, how concerned would you be about Wall going forward, and do you like any of these guys on the fringe for the Wizards?
I think you've got to be concerned where John Wall is concerned, especially with how much he relies on that speed and that pace and that explosion. You know, I've never really wanted too much to do with Wall in fantasy the last few years, but yeah, I'm really concerned. In terms of the Washington guys, I think I've probably got more interest in JJ Barea's Twitter account right now than a John Wall replacement. But I think they're gonna struggle, aren't they? The Wizards with this injury again. We were talking about having no bench, and you know, I can't see Satoransky. You know, even Frazier. I mean, from a fantasy standpoint, Frazier's your guy. I think that bit of do it all. Point guards, but it's really going to hurt. It's really going to hurt the Wizards. I just don't see anything there. You know, maybe we see Bradley Beal decide to try and take on other teams all by himself. You know, if you've got an opportunity to trade for Beal, I think that's probably a wise move right now. You know, I don't think it's any clear path to fantasy stubbornness for as great as Beal's been, because that it's going to be a lot harder for him to produce offensively now as well. Not a good position for Washington.
Well, the most disturbing thing is that, didn't we talk last week how I saw that stat? I think when you guys backed me up, that Wall is the league leader in standing around, and he still gets a possible, you know, season disrupting knee injury. maybe they're related. Maybe standing around and then running really fast like is really hard on your joints.
I mean, he had the surgery a couple years ago on it, and I don't know if it flared up somehow. I don't know the specifics there, but you know, it's like you guys said, it's really not good. I mean, you mentioned Beal, and I think he does get a boost. Does Otto Porter get a boost too?
Yeah, he gets a boost in usage.
There's no one else really to get the ball. I mean, he put last game, he had 18, 3-3, 2 steals, 1 block, playing 31 minutes in a game. They ended up winning by 25. So, I mean, Porter, he might be pushing 40 minutes.
In terms of usage, when Wall's down, all of Beal, Porter, and Oubre, they all see over 4% usage rate increase. So, you know, it's a huge bump. I mean, Beal goes from like 30 to 34, 35, which is insane. You know, I think the problem with Beal, though, is, you know, he gets a lot of his production spotting up or, you know, working off screens. But when he's the primary ball handler and he's initiating the offense, I think that's where his struggles were early in the year when Wall was down earlier. You know, sometimes he was getting caught in the mindset of, oh, do I go score or do I need to distribute? And it was really affecting him. And, you know, plus the defense was able to kind of focus on him. So, you know, Beal gets the usage rate increase, but in terms of production, I think he's actually better with Wall on the floor.
I can't really argue with that. I mean, I think like the raw numbers might end up looking better, but you're right. He probably takes a few more shots that aren't as good, and it drives down his field goal percentage a little bit. It'll be interesting to see how long Wall's going to be out. I mean, we really have no idea. They only said that he's doubtful for Tuesday, and he was flying to Cleveland. It's just, I don't know. They're going to make the playoffs anyway, so I just think they're going to play it extremely safe with Wall, and we might not see him for a bit, especially if they keep even just treading water just to make it, and they'll think, you know, they get in, they have some chance when you have Wall and Beal, if Wall can be healthy, that they can at least have a fighter's chance against anyone in the East.
It could be a little of a D'Angelo Russell situation where they just let him rest it and then bring him back later. And with the Wizards, it makes sense because, you know, you're in the playoffs. So right. You might as well. But from fantasy, that sucks, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. anyone else have thoughts on Wall? Or go ahead.
No, I was just looking at the Wizards' salary. Mahimi is almost 17 million of the captain.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely up there with worst contracts. I mean, it's not Joakim Noah, but it's not far off.
We were talking about paying Cousins, and I was thinking I'd rather have a one-legged boogie than Mahimi or Mozgov or Noah. Yeah. You know, I think even when those guys were in their prime, I'd rather have a one-legged Cousins.
yeah, for sure.
There's a lot of bad contracts out there, too. I mean,
all of that's a result of that 2016 contract extension thing. There was just silly money flying around, wasn't it? And you were just looking at, you know, day by day, you'd see the contracts come through, and you're just like, oh my goodness, what are these teams doing? You know, just because you got it doesn't mean you got to spend it on mediocrity. And it's worked for no one, isn't it? It literally has worked for no one.
Yeah. The only teams it was good for was the teams who didn't sign anybody, really. I mean, I was thinking about with Detroit, too, in that trade, like, yes, Boban's one more year for a decent amount of money. Like, you couldn't have gotten the Clippers to take John Lohr instead. Like, they gave him $42 million. He signed for the next 2 years at 10.5, and he can't even play. He's hurt right now, and who knows if he's even capable of playing afterwards. Just so many bad contracts from that spike. It was pretty remarkable. That spike also go ahead.
Oh, no, I was finish your thought on the salary stuff.
I was going to transition away, so go ahead, say what you're going to say.
I was going to see if I could just throw in something else that happened in the last week that I just thought of that was really funny while we segue into something else. Mm-hmm. So the All-Star selections took place, the pick your teams, which should have been televised, by the way, but that's a whole different issue. And after the Thunder game, after the picks had been made and they had the list of people, and I guess Westbrook was listed at the bottom, and he was getting interviewed after the game. Look this up on YouTube if you haven't seen the video yet. And Westbrook's like, yeah, I guess I was at the bottom of the list. And the reporter goes, well, yeah, it's alphabetical. And he goes, it's alphabetical? And the reporter goes, yeah. And Westbrook turns over to his teammates and goes, see, I told you.
Yeah.
They were giving him a hard time telling him he got picked last. and he thought he got picked last.
It would have been funny to see him in the All-Star game going wild just because he got picked last.
Okay. But just when he turns his head and goes, see, I told you, it's the fun. Look that up on YouTube right after you're done listening to this podcast.
So yeah, I was saying with the cap spike that year, that led to Mike Conley being the highest paid player in the league. And I brought up last week that I thought he was going to be shut down and not play another game this year. And everybody agreed with me. Well, they already announced it in an email sent to season ticket holders, which was kind of funny, but let's just focus on the Grizzlies for a bit right now. I mean, Jermichael Green not playing in Monday, has missed a few games. I feel like he could step it up if he does get some time. You know, James Ennis hurt his calf. He was a guy that, you know, I thought he could get traded to someone else with, say, Tyreek to maybe get a first-round pick back, stuff like that. But start with you, Craig. Just what do you see from this Memphis team for the rest of the season for real life and fantasy?
Well, from a real life standpoint, you can't blame the Grizzlies for shutting down Conley. They were going nowhere.
Right.
And in my honest opinion, I don't want my star player being anywhere near JB Bickerstaff coaching. gives me hope that maybe I can coach in the NBA at least, I suppose. But the guy that I'm a big fan of, and whether it happens this season or not, is it's going to pen down to whether Marc Gasol gets traded. Is Deonta Davis, fantastically gifted player. Wonderful player in college. Obviously, he had the troubles with the injuries. That fingers crossed behind him. Has started to find his feet now. Has the ability to really put up some big fancy numbers. Given a bit of time, of course, but the skill set's definitely there to be a significant fantasy producer once the minutes come in. But you start clearing out, Tyreek, possibly Gasol. There are a few guys of intrigue. I mean, Dylan Brooks has been, a pleasant surprise for everyone this season, I think. We're talking about a guy, Oregon, very good player. I've always believed in the skill set as whether opportunity was going to be there, and he certainly turned into some form of a bargain in the draft for the Grizzlies, and definitely a high point. But it's a side that's going nowhere fast. They've got, wingmen that are struggling to shoot. Gasol looks disengaged. I know he had his big game the other night. The rumours of Tyreek going to, was it Boston the rumours were? I saw there was rumours somewhere.
There's been talks with them and the Wizards. Like, the Wizards one I brought up because I heard them talking Evans with Ennis so they get someone else for depth, and that would let them trade the first round pick because they're not going to give up their first just for Tyreek.
Yeah, and I think that deal is something that could make sense for both sides. It's something that could happen, but it is a little bit of a fantasy lottery here, I think, in terms of, I think second half of the season, we don't know who we're going to see on the roster. Me, myself, in deeper leagues and Dynasty, I'm definitely speculating on Deonta Davis. Dylan Brooks is becoming a popular pickup, so he may or may not be available, but again, another guy that I'm going to be speculating on. But you can keep
Craig, what's your scouting report on Jarrell Martin?
Do you know what? I'm not a big fan from a fantasy standpoint. I think a better real-life player than he is in fantasy. He's another one of these guys, I think, that could play 30 minutes and put up 3 boards and 2 assists and not a lot else. It's certainly not a guy that I think you need to be rushing to the waiver for, unless you're in some kind of 24 or 20-man league, or, that might be excessive, maybe 16, 18-man league.
Jermichael Green coming back is going to hurt Martin's value, but it seems like in the short term he's had a few good games, like 14-7 with a couple threes. Is he an outside shooter? I've been waiting all week to ask you about Martin. So sorry about jumping in.
But do you actually see that as sustainable? It's not. I think that's more of an anomaly for me at this stage in the NBA than actually being something sustainable. I think if there is a guy from a wild card standpoint that could actually have something, I'd say I'd more like to punt on Wayne Seldon, to be honest. Wayne Seldon Jr. had a fantastic summer league and actually looked the part of an NBA player. Went out there and starred for the Grizzlies summer league team. I think there's something there. Obviously,
agreed.
And Ben McLemore's not doing anything in that similar type of role anytime soon. And if in summer league, he did look fantastic. He's got the college pedigree behind him as well. There could be something there, but again, I want to see him get healthy. But definitely somebody just to keep an eye on, especially if there is roster moves with the Grizzlies here. But yeah, it's interesting for fantasy. It's a land of opportunity. We've got to see how it all sways out from a minutes point of view and see where the tide turns. But there's definitely a few names to be keeping an eye on. I mean, what are your guys' thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with the Seldon. I agree with Seldon. And Harrison, he's going to probably soak up most of the point guard minutes. Chalmers is still there, but, they'll probably get him around 20 minutes a game. Harrison, he's not great, but, he's getting the opportunity, the minutes. And, he's been shown, capable of, you know, scoring some points and, you know, grabbing some boards and dishing out some dimes. So, but yeah, I really like Seldon too, because he has, you know, he has 30 point upside. So,
yeah, you talked about, you know, being a guy being better in real life than fantasy. I feel like the opposite is true for Harris. Like, I don't like Andrew Harrison at all, but any point guard that sees enough minutes just becomes fantasy relevant just from the assists alone. I do like Deontay Davis a lot. Well, the block rate could be great if he gets the minutes. I mean, right now it's all over the place. Like, he'll go stretches without getting a block for a while and then have a five-block game. Seeing consistent minutes will go a long way in him finding consistency. And I think they're going to lower Gasol's time, you know, going to the end of the season. I don't think he's going to get shut down, but he's going to be resting quite a few games, I think, making a lot of these guys like great DFS options those days where Gasol does sit out. Brent, your thoughts on Memphis guys?
Yeah, I mean, if I had to choose, and I'm just assuming that, you know, we're not talking, Gasol's like on the sidelines for this one because he's awesome, and, you know, everyone wants Gasol. So outside of Gasol, if I had to pick like two guys for the rest of the season to get off of the Grizzlies, I would start with Jamichael Green. You could probably get him on waivers. I mean, this guy, he was really hot before he got hurt. He was double-digit rebounds, putting up double-doubles with multiple blocks per game. He can hit. He hits baseline threes. You know, he could easily put up a couple threes with a couple blocks with a double-double, and that's pretty valuable in most leagues. So I like Jamichael Green a lot as a pickup. He should be back this week. And then I think the other guy who I would focus on just from fantasy and the numbers he can put up would be Dylan Brooks. Just I see him sort of being poor man's Wayne Ellington right now. And we've seen Wayne Ellington's kind of gone even almost stepping out of the Thragnoff box a little bit. And, you know, I think Brooks with a little more confidence the rest of the season could end up, you know, could add in a couple steals and a couple assists to go along with those threes and points. You know, if he can get himself around five or six boards, you know, I like Brooks a lot. So I think, you know, just to keep it kind of brief, those two guys would be sort of who I'm looking at. If Green somehow gets hurt again or whatever, I see the argument with Martin, but I'm just looking at the numbers. I didn't know a lot about him, but just purely from a number standpoint, Martin is intriguing just for the fact that he can hit threes and get rebounds and's been putting up, you know, mid-teens in points. So, but you know, Craig's the scouting report expert. So I definitely trust him. I'm just looking at the numbers. I don't know anything about him, but I like Brooks and Brooks and Green.
Brooks is an intriguing one actually, because Brooks is actually a very talented player and actually a very high IQ basketball guy. And it was quite an interesting comparison there that you made with Ellington. I think Brooks has the potential to actually be a very, very good NBA player. One of the guys who look back on the draft and think, actually, wow, why did he, you know, slip that far? So there's definitely some potential there. I mean, it's not too difficult to see, actually, when you see him play, but very high IQ guy, coached very, very well in a very good system.
And talk about a team that...
That Oregon team... Sorry, real quick. That Oregon team was so good with Brooks and Bell. And who was the guy who the other star that got hurt? They would have been championship bound. Totally spacing on the...
I think Bell. Was it Bell that got hurt? I believe it was
Bell. No, not Bell. It was... they had another player who got hurt towards the end of the regular season. Like a knee injury that kept him out. Okay. But Brooks and Bell really stepped up in the March Madness. But yeah, that was an awesome Oregon team.
Yeah, just with Memphis, it's just such a rough spot too. I mean, we mentioned all these other horrible contracts. The worst contract of that summer is Chandler Parsons, right? I mean, 4 years, $94 million, and he's barely played. They have 65% of the cap and almost $75 million locked into Conley, Parsons, and Gasol. And you know, we talked about before how they owe their first-round pick to Boston. It's not this year, but the year after, 2019, 1 through 8 protected, 1 through 6 in 2020, and then unprotected in 2021. Man, this is their chance to completely bottom out, try to get that high pick, and then you either, depending on how next year goes, try to run back in the playoffs so that giving up that pick isn't so devastating, or if you start slow again, you try to bottom out again and make sure you keep the pick where it's while it's top eight protected. But there's like no maneuverability on this team. I mean, if they weren't able to sign Tyreek on the biannual this year, I mean, it just this team would be among the worst in the league with how things have turned out with Conley getting hurt and consequently not playing another game the rest of the season.
I'm just intrigued at the moment. I'm just trying to wrap my brains on who the Oregon guy is. Are you thinking, is it Tyler Dorsey you're thinking of?
Yeah, I was doing the same thing.
Got to be Tyler Dorsey, right?
Trying to remember. I mean, he was definitely on the team.
Wasn't it Boucher? Was it Boucher? Chris Boucher. Boucher. No, maybe it was Dorsey who I'm thinking of.
Got to be Dorsey. Yeah, Boucher's the Canadian guy. I'm sure it's Tyler. It's got to be Tyler Dorsey.
Boucher got hurt too, but yeah Dorsey is who I'm thinking of. And he was like their main, he was the main big name, and then he got injured and Brooks and Bell really stepped up, and I think that may be the reason why they kind of fell in the draft is they weren't quite as touted as this other guy. And then
Tyler Dorsey was a senior Tyler Dorsey was a senior, so he had that sort of tag sort of draft wise that the upside wasn't necessarily there.
Boucher is actually 25 years old already too. So,
yeah,
I had no idea either. But yeah, he's the one who did tear his ACL. Dorsey was hurt too, but so we were both we were all on the right track. Finally figured it out. Anything else you guys want to hit on quickly before we wrap this up?
No, that's good for me.
Brent,
all good.
Right. Yeah, no, I think we covered quite a bit there, and
for sure. So we're going to try to stick with, getting these podcasts up Tuesday morning, recording them Monday. So plan on that schedule for all you listeners going forward. Anything you want us to talk about, let us know in the comment section of basketball.rasball.com. Reach out to us on Twitter if you like. I'll include all of our Twitter handles in the description of this post. And we'll call it a podcast there. Talk to everybody soon. Take care.
All right, take it easy.
Basketball.